explained based upon what we're going to read in the Gemara on the next page. So he explains that the reason why they have both the calves, in other words, or the cowhide, whatever you want to say, right? The bull hide, okay, call it bull hide. And the donkey hide is because there was a pasuk at the beginning of Sefer Yeshayahu where it says, Yoda Shor Konehu, the ox knows who its master is, the Chamor Ebus Biolov, and the donkey knows, literally, the stall, you know, or the crib in which they put the food, the master puts the food for him, right? So, in other words, the animals themselves, they know who their master is. But Yisrael lo Yoda, says the prophet Yeshayahu, the people of Israel do not know, right? And Amilo Hispanon, my people do not pay any attention. So that, naturally, they don't pay attention to what? To who is their balabas? They mean the Beit Shalilim, you see. Right. So that's the reason why. I mean, why is he getting Malkus? It's because he disregarded what the Beit Shalilim had told him to do, you see. So that's the reason why. So that's why they combine these two. Okay. And then the Mishnah now continues. Okay, so now we know what the straps are made of,
right,
what they look like. And, okay, and now it says, Umake oisei shalish melefonov ishte yodis b'acharov. And he whips him. One third of the blows are on his chest, melefonov, literally in front of him, on his chest, right? Ushte yodos, and two thirds, this is what the word yodos over here means, over here, right? Two portions, two thirds, right, and two portions, mila acharot, behind him, on his back, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And then he says, v'yeinim akir so, and he does not whip him, that is meaning, you know, the person who is being whipped, lo omeid, that is the man who is to be whipped, cannot be either in a vertical position, either standing, below Yoshev, nor can be he seated, Ela Muta, but he has to be bent over, Shenema, even as we said, even as the Pasuk says in connection with Malkus, it says, Pilo HaShofet, that literally the judge has to cause him to fall down. Okay? So that's the reason why he has to be bent over in order to do it. Okay? Then it continues and it says, V'hamake, make biyodei achas, and the person who is administering the Malkus, he hits him, but as he strikes him with one hand, not with both hands, but with one hand, b'chol koichai, with all his strength. Okay?
Yeah.
We'll stop for a moment over here again to take a look at the Rashi. Okay? Alright. So he says, Hoyamaka. Okay?
Yeah, right next to the
right. Yeah. By the way, in connection with the word chazan, the question is, what is the derivation of it? So take a look at the margin on the left of that.
Mm-hmm.
It says Rashal Omer, that's what Shlomo Luria, Rashal. He says Shehu Loshen Chozeh. He says that the word chazan is derived from the word chozeh. Chozeh in Hebrew means to look at something or to oversee something. Okay. So Perish Roe Tzorchei Ha'ir, in other words, he sees what has to be done to serve the needs of the community.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the derivation of the word chazan, according to him. Okay. All right. Anyway, getting back over here, Hoyamaka. So says, you know, that this is the way he would whip him. He says Kishahu Magbia Yodo, that when he would raise his hand Umorid, and then he would lower his hand. So hein olos v'yodos. So the straps would go up and down. This is the up and down. Kach kibel Rabbi Meikora. And this is the tradition that Rabbi over here, he means Rashi.
Mm-hmm.
Because he's used it several times. Since he wrote this after the death of Rashi.
Oh.
This was his Zainikul, the Riban. Oh. Rabbi Yehuda ben Nosson, okay?
Oh.
So, this is what it means. It has nothing, it's not related to, you know, Rabbi that we usually find in the Gemara, but we mean Rabbi Yehuda Anasi.
Mm.
But he means, this is the way Rashi understood, okay? that the oilers for yordas refers actually to the way the whipping that's being administered, that goes up and then it goes down. Okay, we translated it before in the sense that the entire belt, you know, if you suspend it, so it goes up and down, you know, the three straps are together. But here he seems to refer to the olos for yordos rather to the nature of how he's beating him, right? That he first has to raise his hand, and then, you know, he strikes down. What?
Tosfos.
Tosfos. Do you see a Tosfos on this? I don't see a Tosfos on this. Oh, that's what you're talking about. Well, Tosfos included some of Rashi's nephews, some of Rashi's Enochla. But there were others as well. Yeah. Yes. Okay. Also on the Gemara, not just on Rashi, but usually they start with the text from Rashi, and then you know, they either explain Rashi or they disagree with Rashi, or they'll bring in a quotation from other points, you know, to make some other idea. All right, but there was more in Tosafot, I mean, than simply Enochlach of Rashi. There are many other authorities, okay, like the Ri and Rosh of Kusi and others and so on and so forth.
Okay. The
Ri
wasn't one of the grandsons?
The Ri, no. The Ri was not a grandson. And of course, Rabbeinu Tam, that they quote all the time, he was quite Rashi's grandson.
So
Tosafot
includes relations to Rashi?
Yes, okay, correct. Yeah, it has some of his relatives there, right?
Okay.
All right.
Where are we?
All right. So it says, "Hoimak shumak biyah right yodei zomeret so hein oilos biyodos." In other words, the straps go up and down. Kach kibiyah rabbi miyakara. This is how my rabbi, in other words, my teacher, meaning Rashi, understood this to begin with. The lo nehira lo shon acher the pi rabbi oilos biyodos. And he says the other explanation that we've given until now, namely that the straps themselves go up and down. In other words, the length of the straps, you know. He says, I don't see, he says, that this really is the explanation. Now he says, came down to Firo Shavitsua, because this is the way they sew together a strap. How do they sew it together? He says, Toichev Yodo, right? First of all, he sticks in his hand, Umorin, and then he lowers it, right? Hein Olas Viyodos. Wait a minute. Tochev, I see. Tochev Rosh Ritzua Benekev. Okay, he says. What he does is that he takes the head of the strap, in other words, where the strap begins, he puts it into a hole, literally. In other words, you know, a place that he can use as a hand. And, you know, he puts it in where he can tie it up so that it'll stay together with the handle. Keneged Mate, in other words, where there is, you know, with the stick that he's using as a handle, the choser b'teiche b'nekev acher, and then he ties it into another hole, derech mala. In other words, one is on the bottom, keneged mata. In other words, he has a hole on the bottom where he puts the thongs into the handle, and he has another hole on the top where he puts the other part, where he puts it again. So the nira kamala v'noivet, so that when he uses it, it appears, you know, that the strap is going up and down by virtue of the holes. Well, as we can see, there are differences of opinion exactly what it is, and he's not 100% sure which way to explain it, but we can take it in both ways, because they both make sense. It could be as to how the strap is constructed, and it could also be and what is the action of the strap, you know, when he uses it, okay? Then he says, Yodo Tefach, yes. What he's saying is, you see, you take straps, okay, but what are you going to do with them? Simply hold straps in his hand? That won't be very efficient. So he has to tie them together. And how can he work efficiently? So the answer is, as we see, that there is yod. In other words, or yodah, depends upon which way you want to read it, okay? But at any rate, the meaning would here be the same. It means a handle. He has a handle. The handle could be maybe made out of wood, something like that, most likely, right? Mm-hmm. And then he puts two holes into the handle so that he can take the strap, let's say, and tie it through on the bottom and on the top. So that when he holds it, you know, in his hand, you understand, he's holding the handle and the straps are tied in so that they won't slip out. He's talking about how they make it. Yes. Of the holes, right, there are two holes within the handle.
In the handle there are two holes.
Right. In other words, if this is the handle, so he takes the strap and he makes a hole here and he makes a hole here, right? And then he takes the straps and he forces it through the hole here and through the hole up there, so that with his hand now, with the handle, he has control of the straps and he can use it. Yeah. Okay. As we say in French, "Bezolus nishmat afet." May it be the Rebbeinu Shlomo's will that we do not use it. Right. Right. But this is the way he says, you make it. You have to remember, they had plenty of experience with straps. I mean, they used them in order to tell the horse to go forward, to go back, whatever it may be, right? Or if the donkey decided to be stubborn or something like that, so this is what happened, right? Okay. All right. So next, he says yodo tefach. In other words, the handle was a tefach. It was a hand's breadth. It says makel shetluya bo orko tefach. In other words, the stick and from which the strap hangs was a tefach in length. And the straps themselves, their thickness, you know, when joined together, also comes to a tefach, to a hand's breadth, okay? Umagas, in other words, and it extends in length, at pi kreso, long enough so that it's going to hit the guy in the tummy, okay?
The stick to reach the
beginning. Yeah, right. Shemeshayer kach, because he has to estimate in this way, shekeshehu make, that when he strikes, you know, when he gives a blow, so kola roisho shelvitzua b'fi kreso, the end of the strap has to reach the stomach of the person who is being bitten, b'tchilas kreso, where the stomach protrudes, okay. And he explains, Shehamake Omeid Bitzad Hamuke, says, the person who is administering the Malkus, he's standing at the side of the person who is being administered to, right? Omake Oso, and he strikes him, the Rochav Gabo, over the breadth of his back. In other words, meaning that he hits him across the back, okay? But, as we said before, the strap has to be long enough that when he hits him around the back, so what's going to happen? So Hilkoch, he says, Orechar Tzua Berochav Kol Gabo, he says, the length of the Tzua has to reach around his back, Ad Bekom Shemaslu Shem Hakeres, until the point where the stomach begins. In other words, it has to be long enough to come around through his back and get, let's say, to the tip of his tummy on the outside. The Afal Gav, the Hamor and the Ale, and even though we said before that Ho'evin is sooner lo la'acharav, that there is a stone which is placed behind him, which we said is used in order he can get more strength, you know, and so do it. But Afal Pichay, nevertheless, he says, Hoyehu Mishalchev Atzmo Litzad Sido. So the person who's doing the whipping actually can go moving from side to side. And he would hit him, you know, across the back. Okay? Then it says that he gives him shlish milfonov, right? One third of the blows have to land in the front of the person. So what is in the front? He says al habetin. In other words, it has to be in the area of the stomach. That's where he gives him the blows in the front. Ushtei yodos meyacharov. And two thirds of the blows have to go on the back. And it says the Gemara Meforish Talmud. The Gemara will explain afterwards why it is twice on the back and once on the front. Okay. And then the rest of the Mishnah says, okay, The Hakore Kore, and the person who is reading, in other words, he's reading, he's saying, you know, they're keeping count, but also at the same time, not just keeping count. We'll see actually that there were three people who kept count, okay? But one of them has to read psukim from the Torah or from Tanakh in order to tell this person, why he's being beaten. He's being beaten because of the fact that he transgressed, he violated. But at the same time, as we'll see, there are also different words of there are different nechama as well. There are words of consolation in the last pasuk that they recite. Now, first of all, what does he say? All right, so he gives a general statement. Imloi sishbur la'asos, it's called divrei atir azos, haksum masir azer, and so on, et cetera. In other words, if you do not observe the words of God, and so on and so forth, then what does the next pasuk say? It says, v'hifla d'shem esbakusecho, yesbakus zarecho, makus chud, and so on and so forth. And in that pasuk, v'hifla d'shem esbakusecho, that God will make known to you what your makos are, and also the makos of the seed, etc., etc. And there are how many words in the pasuk? The answer is there are 13 words in the pasuk. Okay. The chayz of the tchilas hamikra, and then he goes back again to the beginning of the pasuk. Then he continues with vishbatim istuvi abris hazos vasisa v'som leman taskilu, right? The chol asher tasun. It says you are to observe the words of this covenant, so that you may do that which is right in everything that you do. And again, how many psukim do we have? How many words do we have in the pasuk? We have 13 over there. If we would take the chumash, and we take a look, we'd see. The chosim, and then he concludes with the following. That's the pasuk, of course, that we're all familiar with from the Myra, but in other places too, we say it every day in the Shabbos too. But it's really a pasuk taken from Tehillim. And again, how many words are there? 13 words, all right? And of course, wants to say that God is merciful, he will forgive sin, right? He will certainly, the Rebbeinu Shalalem, that as often as he becomes angry, he will forgive, right? Nor will he arouse all his anger. So in other words, the person who is being beaten should realize that it's for his own good. He has violated, he has sinned, but nevertheless, he should also realize that the final analysis, the Rebbeinu Shalom wants to be mechaper, he wants to forgive him for his sins, and leman taskilo, so that also that you will learn how to do good, you learn how to act with seichel, literally, right, in whatever you undertake to do. The chosen tchas hamikra. All right, and he goes back again to the beginning of the pasuk. In other words, how many times he would repeat these psukim, or he could take one pasuk and repeat it three times, let's say, in order to get 39, or maybe he could go through a sequence of, 1, 2, 3, each one with 13, or something like that. This is not really spelled out 100% how it should be done, okay? Our custom is that at Mishloach Malkus Erev Yom Kippur, and I told you last week that there are those who do it. We had a rabbi over here. He asked me, Erev Yom Kippur, I should give him Malkus. Are you sure? He said, yes, I want you to give me Malkus.
Really?
Yeah, for real. I won't tell you who it is. But anyway, he took out his belt and he said to me, give me Malkus. So I gave him Malkus, very gently. And I said, Rachum, and so I said, this pasuk.
Really?
Yes. He insisted. Because there is a tradition that if you get Malkus in this world, then you'll be spared, Yisurim in the world to come.
Then you should have given him a regular Malkus.
I had a heart.
You're not the one. You're not the Shamus.
I was shocked, but listen, this was his request. He felt better. So
he felt better. Did you feel better?
I felt very fine. But that's why I only gave him very, very light.
It's discussed in various sources.
Yeah.
As a minhag.
Right. There's no question. There were people who did it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Lubavitch, they do it too.
Yes.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Oh yes.
Right.
This is contrary to what we learned. The man gets malchus only after he transgressed, after he's been warned.
Correct.
All right?
Correct.
Now,
in other words, this is not malchus given by a despot.
Right.
So it's not malchus being given by a despot. This is malchus for a different purpose.
We all know that we have sinned.
Okay, we all know that we commit things that are not right during the course of the year. So in order to atone, if chas v'sholom, you know, we did something for which we would have deserved malchus, so we have him now, and that will spare us yisurim and doylem hapa. You see, this is the whole idea behind it.
Where does the difference of the severity of an issue vary against the malchus?
The severity
the
of
same
the
punishment.
Well, yeah.
Are you talking about malchus administered by the Bezdin, or are you talking about separate?
No, he's talking about the Bezdin.
Well, there's a man who asked you for malchus, and we don't know what he's trying to atone for or anything, and yet his punishment is in the area of a real severe transgressor, let's say.
Okay.
But it's what varies the punishment?
I understand. I mean, you're saying that it's the same punishment. Obviously, number one, I'm not giving him malchus.
We read over
here in the Mishnah. Explain
fact,
over here.
Right. I'm not giving it's like giving him the malchus. You're committing a transgression.
That's if I would hurt him.
Yeah.
If I would draw blood. Yeah. Well, okay. But now we'll see that the end of the Mishnah over here, which says over here, that and what would happen? Chas v'shalom. Let's finish this Mishnah first of all. It says, "Say the im meis tachas yodoi potter." Now, what would happen if the man died suddenly?
While he's getting malchus.
Then in that case, we say that the chazan akneses, the man who is administering it, is not liable. In other words, he didn't do any deliberate murder. Okay. And he wouldn't have to go into exile either. However, what happens if Hosef lo od ritzu achas, let's say he gave him one more blow than the man should have gotten, or mace, and then the man died, then in that case, hareze gola al yodam. And in that case, he has to go into golas, that is the person that's ministering, because he has to be careful not to overdo it. Yes.
Does that mean one more blow, or does it mean that he added a scrap?
Ritzua means the blow. Yeah, we have to, the same word can be understood one way, it can be understood another way. We have to go according to the rhythm, according to what the sense is. I mean, what is the Mishnah trying to convey to us, you see? So obviously over here, Ritzua has to mean the blow itself. Yeah, I agree with you, but if it says that he's to have, you know, a triple scrap, right? If you put in four, that's already a violation of what the Chachamim said.
That's right, to begin with. That's why he would be punished for doing that.
Yeah, but this is not the way it's understood. Okay? At least that's not the way I understand it. I understand in the sense that Ritzu itself refers to he gave him an additional blow. He gave him more than the man should have gotten. Okay?
There's a note here that I don't understand.
Yeah, what does it say?
It says the agent is exempt in this case according to the rule of Abba Shaul, that exile is imposed only in cases where the death occurred as a result of a voluntary act on the part of the inadvertent killer, but not if he was a father carrying out his obligation, train his son, or an agent acting on behalf of the Beis Din.
Okay, I'll come back to that when we do the rush. Okay. Yeah. All right. Niskalkel. Now, what if the person finally is? This is what I remember is the last thing that we did last week over here in the Mishnah. What if the person had an accident, bein berei, bein b'mayim, whether it is by getting a bowel movement or whether it is by urinating, as a result, you know, the blow, the punishment, and so on. So potter, at that point, it stops. Okay. This is what the Tanna Kamma says over in the Mishnah. Okay, Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He says Rabbi Yehuda Omer Ho Ish Bereva Ish B'Mayim, and here it says that Rabbi Yehuda says that if it's a man, if he should defecate, then that's it. That's the end of it. But in other words, the implication is that if he urinates, then that's not considered so shameful to him. Okay? Whereas with a woman, even if she just urinates, then there's no question that already she feels shame, disgraced, and so on. And of course, let's not forget, what does it say in general about the idea of malchus? It says, v'niklo ochicha v'yeinecha, right? So one of the first words is v'niklo. What does v'niklo mean? V'niklo means to become disgraced.
Right.
Some translated debased and so on and so forth. Yeah, whatever it may be. But it means disgraced, all
right? Right.
And so, if as a result that he already got a klop, and he did this, obviously he feels ashamed and he feels disgraced that people should see him in this particular condition. So they stop at that particular point because it has now been fulfilled, the idea of the niklo, the enel, right, in your eyes. Okay. All right, let's finish the rest of the Rashi over here. Okay. So, Kore says, right, the person who reads, it says, about Sishma. He says, Hom Ifsha Pshitalon, says, obviously, it should be clear to us, the boy Kriya, that we need to make an actual proclamation of the Torah. In other words, we have to say something to him. Mm-hmm. He's not given Shemais simply without some kind of posik, right, of admonition. Namely, Kedah Moran, Gemara says, increases over there, it says, Bikoras Tiyah. In other words, literally, Bikoras Tiyah means that there is to be an examination by the Beis Din as to, you know, whether the person is done, and that if it happens, then, you know, the Beis Din gives a sentence as to what the punishment should be. So, this is how they translate Bikoras. They translate it as Bikriyo, you see, the Beis Kuf Resh, right? Tehei. The top is Tehei. In other words, let it be by reading a pasuk or by reciting a pasuk from the Torah. Okay, the lahochi katani hacha v'hakare, and because this is how they, this is what they teach over there, and the Gemara creases concerning what it says over here, v'hakare. All right, then the Mishnah said a meis tachas yoda potter, right? If he died, you know, while he was getting malchus, then potter, who is potter? In other words, the Shliach Beis Din, he says, the Shliach Beis Din, because he is, after all, the person who is carrying out the literally the message for the Beis Din. In other words, he's acting on their behalf. And we said, back again on Daf Ches, right? If you remember, it says over there that Yotzo Ha'ov Hamakez Beno Mishleach Beis Din. That if we had over there the business, you know, that, you know, let's say the father chastises his child, okay? He beats him. So, in that case, he would not have to go into exile if the child died as a result of the beating. Doesn't mean that he should, you know, actually chastise it, but if it happened, you know, for some reason or other, the kid had a heart attack while it was going on or something like that, then in that particular case, the father does not go into exile, because exile, he's acting, shall we say, within his prerogative
as
a father to chastise his son in order to teach him, you know, to go in the Derech HaYosher. Okay, so the same thing, the Shliach Beis Din too qualifies under the same category, that if it happened and he was in the act of fulfilling, then in that case he would not go into exile.
Of course, in today's world, he would be brought up and put in jail for
doing right. Exactly. Today, there's no question about it.
Yeah.
The Hosef Loretzua Al HaOmed says, now, if he gave him an additional blow, this is why I'm translating it, because Al HaOmed, in other words, more than what had been estimated by the Beis Din as to what, how much an amount the person could receive. Because, as we mentioned before, it might be 18, remember we've had that before, that maybe the Beis Din determines that the person can only stand 18 blows.
Maybe the punishment was the one such that only 18 was
No, I mean, theoretically it should be 39.
Yeah, no.
But the Beis Din could decide, you know, that he could get 3, he could get 6, 9, 10, 12, not 10, 9. 12, of course, as we said, it has to be a number that can be divided by 3, shtalish, right? So, if they said, let's say, that he deserves 18, as we had the case before,
yeah.
And what happened if he gave him 19 instead of 18? and the man died, then in that case he has to go into Golos. Why? Because he went beyond, he was no longer acting as the Shliach Beis Din, but obviously he didn't do it because he wanted to murder the person. So this is a case of going into Golos.
He did it by mistake.
He got it right. It was an accident. Okay. So he says, "Sosulor Ritzu Al Olmid," right? Or Mace, and the man died. So Hari is a Gola Al Yodim, right? Then he has to go into Golos. Below Domei Liko Asora Bnei Odom. Now he throws in something over here which has nothing to do with particularly with. But he brings a case, another Gemara over there, which says, let's say if 10 people attack one person, the Esamaklos, with 10 sticks. Each one had a stick, and they beat a person. So the Amrinon, the Haniswafen, this Gemara, Perak Haniswafen in Sanhedrin. So it said over there, Kulam Peturim, they are all Potter, why? The Hahi, Ukim, the Lord, the Graces, the Yodam. Because there they are talking about a person who anyway was on his deathbed already, and so that all that they did was simply make amends, they hastened it to a certain extent. But this is a little bit far-fetched in itself. Yes, that's the correct, but as we'll see, there is more than one person who's involved. Okay, we anticipate, this is what we'll learn on the next page. Okay. All right. Then it finally said the skull killed Potter. Why the seven Nikla? Right, the Hari Nikla, because of the Basak says he's to be disgraced. So he certainly has already been disgraced.
Right.
All right. So now the Gemara takes this Mishnah and they go phrase by phrase to analyze it. First of all, it says my Tama. What is the reason? This is really in reference to everything. Why do they give him Malkus in the first place? And the answer is Bishum Nikla, because the Torah says that the man is to be, he's to feel disgraced by virtue of the fact that he had to get Malkus in the first place. Okay? Omer Rab Sheshes said, Mishum Rabbi Elozim ben Azariah, in the name of Rabbi Elozim ben Azariah, he says, now we have a series of statements where Rab Sheshes quotes Rabbi Elozim ben Azariah. Actually, it was about 100 years of difference in age between them, because Rabbi Elozim ben Azariah lived roughly about the year 100 of the Common Era. Rav Sheshes came at a much later period, but nevertheless it seems that he had a collection somehow or other of statements attributed to Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So he quotes this plus several others at this point. Okay, one of them is Menayin L'Ritzua Shehishal Egel. How do we know that the belt, I mean the strap that is being used, that it has to be of, as we said before, calf or cowhide, right?
Yeah.
Or bullhide. Dichsiv, because it's written, Arboyim Yakenu. First it says, you know, he's to get 40 malchus, 40 stripes, right? The son of play, and right after that we have the Pasuk L'sasam Shor B'nisho, that you're not allowed to muzzle the ox, you know, while he's doing his threshing, okay? So, on that basis, this is why one of the straps has to be that, okay? Now, since they got started on that, so Be'omar Rab Sheshes, Mishum Rabbi Elozim and Azariah, he says, Menayin Liyavoma, Shanofot Neimuka Shchin. How do we know that? What if there is a woman, you know, whose husband has died, she has never had any children, right? And therefore, what is the rule? The rule is that she has to have, she has to be married by her brother-in-law, her husband's brother, right? Now, what if this husband's brother, the Yovam, in other words, is a Mukesh Shchin? He is a person who is afflicted with leprosy. He has HIV. Okay? Has HIV. So, in that case, how do we know Shein Chospino? So how do we know you're not allowed to muzzle her? In other words, if she protests that she doesn't want it, how do you know that you have to listen to her? And what would then be the solution? The solution would be that the man would have to give her chalitza,
right,
in order to free her.
Right.
So how do we know that you're not allowed to muzzle her? She has every right to express herself, right? Dichsiv, because the pasuk says, "Lasasam shor b'nisho." Okay. So in other words, he's giving another drash for Lasasam shor b'nisho.
You may not muzzle an ox for doing
right. Right. No. When we say egel, okay, the answer is it's right. It's any type of either ox, cow, or calf. Okay? That's all that it means. Okay? The stomach, like, yes. So first it says, the sasom show b'disho, right, that you're not allowed to muzzle the ox literally. In other words, don't muzzle her. And then what is the next section that we have? The stomach, it says, ki yeshu achim yachdav. When brothers dwell together, meis achad mehem, one of them dies, etc., etc. In other words, the parshas yivon. Okay? So we're not allowed to muzzle her if she objects to this person, you know, marrying her.
Isn't the implication of Mukhishin as a danger to her rather than just a maneuver? I always understood it to mean that he's simply a maneuver. He's simply a person who is very unappetizing in appearance.
Okay. It would be a perfectly good one.
Rather than any
right.
kind of infectious
right.
implication.
Mukhishin, literally, as we said, means a person afflicted with leprosy.
Right.
But, I mean, if we go back, I mean, to the Drushas, I mean, what the Chazal said concerning leprosy, that it's a motzi shemra, in other words, a person who is guilty of slander. So in other words, it is moral leprosy.
All right.
Moral leprosy.
I wasn't getting
right.
theological about it. I was just really trying to understand the standard connotation
right.
of Mukhishin as somebody whose appearance is very unappetizing rather than his being a health hazard.
Right.
As in,
but we can understand it in more than one way. That's the answer.
Right.
Yeah. Certainly understand it in more than one way. The Yomer Rav Sheish of Bishop and Elizabeth Nazaria has another one. It says, Kolam Vazeh Samayadim Kiilu Evid Akum. It says, whoever literally despises, in other words, he violates the festivals, it's as if he were engaged in idolatry. Ditziv, because the pasuk says, Elohim asehu lesatzeloch, that you're not to make unto yourself any molten images, right? And the samech leim, right next to it, there's a pasuk which says, it's chakam atzis tishma. So that therefore, by the juxtaposition of the two, we see that if you treat with contempt the festivals, then it is as if you were guilty of idolatry. All right, let's stop for a moment over here and take a look at the Rashi. All right, Rashi says, first of all, ein chosben, right? In other words, you're not allowed to muzzle her. Ein megarin bo, you don't scream at her, you don't scold her. Shelo tamar iyafshi. So in order to prevent her from saying, I don't want him. On the contrary, listen to her. Now, what is Amvazes Habandar? This is what the question is. The Pshat would be actually the Yom Tevim, because the Yom Tevim themselves are called Ela Moadei Hashem. Okay, these are the festivals of the Lord. However, there is another drash, and this is the drash that Rashi brings over here. He says, what does it mean, is Hamoados? Says by the Moados, he means actually Chulo Shomoid. In other words, if a person has contempt for Chalamoid, in other words, he treats it just like an ordinary day, doesn't treat it as a special day in Yontiv, you know, in the Yontiv period, then it's as if he were engaged in idolatry. Right. Question is, I mean, on what basis do they come to that conclusion, those who hold that way? So the answer is because, let's take a look over here. As he quotes, remember, Chagam Atzai Yishma, right? It says, before Chagigah, it says, the Lord says, Chagigah, Im Barishon of Ashvi, if we're talking about, you know, in reference to Pesach,
right?
That you're not allowed to do any work when? On the first day of the Yontif and on the seventh day of the Yontif, right? So Harekvamur. Torah already has specifically said that. So, then why do we have this pasuk? It's Chagam Atzos Tishmor and so on. It says, it came Lahasir to warn us El Al Chulei Shomoyed, that concerning Chalamoyed, She'osu Basis Melacha, not allowed to do Melacha on that day, during Chalamoyed. Because what kind of malacha are we permitted to do on the Chol HaMoed? This is what occupies, you know, a good portion of the Gemara.
In the process,
It's a Gemara called Moed Kot.
Yeah.
Okay, and the Moed Kot, they deal with what kind of malachas are permissible to do during Chol HaMoed. so that we should understand that we should not treat Chol HaMoed simply as just another weekday, a work day, or something like that. So, generally speaking, categories that of work which are permitted on Chol HaMoed fall into two. One of them is what we call Meleches Dovah HaOled, which means that if you don't do it, then you will suffer a tremendous economic loss. That's one possibility, okay? And the other one is the fact that it's Tzorach Rabin, or Tzorchi Rabin. In other words, what you're doing is in the nature of serving the public. So that would be permitted. I mean, for example, let's say a doctor. Mm-hmm. Doctor has to go in order to treat patients because he's serving the public, okay? Teacher might be in that category, although you have other prohibitions. In general, for example, you shouldn't write on the Chol HaMoed. If you write, it has to be with the Shidui. In other words, make some change. Hold the pen a different way, or scrawl instead of writing clearly, or whatever. I mean, that has to be.
Write clearly instead of scrawl.
Right. Right, if you're a doctor.
What's that?
Write clearly instead of scrawling.
Oh, that's right.
If you're a doctor.
Switching pens? I always wondered about that.
Yeah.
Using an unaccustomed pen.
Right, I mean, doing something, to make a shinui, so that you're aware of the fact that you shouldn't be doing it, but you have to do it because the circumstances compel you to do it, okay?
So those are the two categories.
Those are the two general categories. I'm not going into every single detail, but those are the two general categories of work for me, okay? All right. So, but we see, that you have to have respect for Chol HaMoed. I'll tell you one thing, okay? When you go, for example, to Eretz Yisrael, you find that loads and loads of businesses are closed on Chol HaMoed. And it's a very funny feeling that a person from America gets. I still remember the cultural shock that I had on the second day of Pesach. First time that I witnessed it. I mean, by now it's came in the
door.
Well,
you have to keep the second day of Pesach.
I have to keep the second day of Pesach. And here I see Yidden, the Lange Bell, and women, with the Scheitlach and everything else, and the kids with all dressed up and the Yontif Dikker Plater, and they're running down to Luna Park. In other words, what do I mean by Luna Park? They set up these carnivals for the kids in certain areas so that the kids can have themselves a good time, or people run to the zoo and things like that and so on. And you see them boarding the buses and hailing cabs and everything else.
You're allowed
and
to do
here,
all that.
They're allowed to do it, absolutely.
You're allowed to carry money and so on.
Yes,
and so
they can carry money and everything else, absolutely. But they're not going into work. They're not going into work. And, in Eretz Yisrael, the custom is not to put on tefillin, even if you follow the Zechashkenaz. I mean, with us, we usually put on tefillin. Eretz Yisrael, you don't. The custom is not to. And,
so when you're there, you don't do it.
That's right. When you're there, you don't put on tefillin during the holiday. It's to feel more Yontif, you see. So you really have a different feeling of Yontif over there as compared to what you see over here. But I've seen something along the same lines in places like Borough Park also, where a lot of people take off during the week. Some businesses will be closed during Chol HaMoed. Usually, for example, you go to Borough Park, it's a place where you buy clothing and things like that. Most of the clothing stores are closed, particularly those that operate in private homes.
Yes.
They close them, they have a lot of them in Borough Park. Men's clothes, women's clothes and things like that, children, so they close because they're obeying the fact, that it's Chol HaMoed and it's Yontif. We shouldn't lose sight of the fact that it's Yontif. All right, let's finish over here. Okay. Now he gives another taich. Another Russian that he gave. He says, "Kolam sape loshon hora." Everyone who tells loshon hora, who tells something slanderous and so on, something that shouldn't be saying. The kol hamakabel loshon hora, and likewise the person who receives loshon hora. In other words, he listens to it, right? The kol hameyedei the sheker, and whoever bears false witness, roi la hashlichi la klovim. He deserves to be thrown to the dogs. Needless to say, it's a little exaggerated. But nevertheless, you can see, you know, the feeling against going around tail-bearing, you see. Dichsiv, as the Pasuk says, like Kela Tashlichin or so, right, throw it to the dog. The Samach Bein, right next to it, says, Lo Siso Shem Hashav. In other words, that you should not literally bear Shem Hashav, you know, a false rumor. And Kori Bey says, Nami, don't read it. Likewise, not only is Lo Siso, which means don't carry it yourself, but Lo Sashi, don't cause others to hear Shem Hashav, to hear Lashon Hara. Okay? So that not only you shouldn't receive, that's the Makabel, but also you and others. Okay. Alright, I think we'll stop at this particular point tonight. And so we're up to Shtevet Tzuas. What are these straps like? Okay? So as you can see, we're already on Chof Gimel over here.
Omid Aleph.
Omid Aleph, right. And we have all together.
September 18, 1996.
Right, Chof Dalet is the last. So we're getting very, very close to the end.
Right.
Now, next week, of course, in Yetzir Shem, as I said, we'll meet after Minchamar. So we're davening at 6:30 next Wednesday night in Yetzir Shem, and then. First of all, again, a reminder for those who came a little bit later that next Wednesday night in Yotzah Hashem, I will not be giving the shiur. Okay. But we'll meet again 2 weeks from tonight. But we have to figure out about what time we want to learn. Okay, because the problem is. So we're up to Ushtevet Tzuris. Of course, incidentally, we can see that we're getting closer and closer to the end. So in 2 weeks from tonight, when we see Vomin Halt, I think that we can begin to think in terms of making a Siyam. And would you like to again arrange, let's say we have a little chicken dinner or something like that, the way we did last year?
Yes.
Good. So I have to talk to Janie and see whether she would be willing.
At least I do. I don't know about the
way. Yeah, I feel it should be done. First of all, there's a Gemara in Shabbos that says that when you complete, you know, you make a celebration.
Yeah.
So, if that's the case, why shouldn't we celebrate? Sure. I mean, make a scene. I told you my preference, I think, would be to go to Sota next, because I'll tell you, I think that it's a very interesting combination, both halacha and nagam in there. Some very beautiful ideas of
the waters.
Yeah, right. I mean, this is what Allah is, but there are also other things over there, like, for example, what can be said in Hebrew and what is not said in Hebrew.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What can be said?
What must be said in Hebrew and what does not have to be said in Hebrew, it can be said in any language and so on.
It reference the prayer.
Right. And then there's also reference as to how did they celebrate the Hakel. In other words, when the king had to read the Torah to the people of Israel and so on. So that's some very interesting things over there.
Sounds very interesting.
All right. So getting back to the two the straps, okay. What the Mishnah said actually, that is, in addition to the original strap, they have two others. And, you know, they go down, if you remember, right, and they're intermingled. And so, all right. So we also learned in the Mishnah that one of the straps is of donkey. The other, of course, is of eagle. In other words, cow or calf or whatever you want to call it. Okay? So, Tana Shel Chamor. Now, the question is, why did they have to have two different types of straps? I don't know. The question ever was raised as to maybe this would constitute some sort of kelayim, you know? They're not allowed to have two different types of animals working together. Remember, we learned that, okay? And, you know, that's one of the classic cases for which you deserve malchus, you see.
Mm-hmm.
So, but the strap, apparently, that's all right. That's not considered kelayim. After all, you're not eating it, you're not planting it, you're not working with it except to shmeis somebody. So I guess they decided for that reason it's permitted. Yeah.
Do you have that picture that I gave?
Yes, I still have it. Only I don't have it on me right now. Okay. Yeah, I didn't lose it. But David cut out a picture from one of the Amit, right, which showed exactly among Arabs over there that they were plowing together. What was it? It was an oxen. A camel and an ox, right, or a camel and a donkey, that's what it was, camel and a donkey. So so you can see that the practice has not died out.
Yeah. It's Morocco.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
They were using two different...
Present day.
Yeah,
they were allowed to do that?
A Jew is not allowed.
The Arabs were
Arabs,
there.
Arabs,
I see.
Right.
Okay. So the practice, they were doing it, yeah.
Right, no, we're not allowed to do it, of course not. The Torah prohibits it, and first of all, there's also an element, of as we would say, Tzar Bala Chaim. I mean, these two animals, they don't have the same capability, so that obviously
one is going to carry more than the other,
right? And then one is going to suffer more than the other, or something like that. You're not allowed to make an animal suffer. Yeah, no, right. No, what am I going to do? Those are Arabs, Mazalachta. Okay.
Oh,
all right, so, at any rate, now the Gemara comments on this idea in the Mishnah. It says, Tana, we have a Baraisa that teaches us that Shel Chamor, that another strap, is of a donkey. Kididorish, Ahu Galiloi, as a certain man from Galilee, not Yoshki. interpreted a verse, Alei, right? Alei the Rav Chisda, okay. A comment that he made in connection with the teaching of Rav Chisda. It says, this is a pasuk in Yeshayahu, the very first chapter. It says, Yoda Ashur Konehu, the ox knows who its master is, Vachamor, and the donkey, Avus Biolov, knows, literally the crib of his master. In other words, he knows where he's going to find the food that his master is going to give him. But Yisrael lo yada, Israel does not know. So in other words, animals know. And here we have the example of both the donkey and the ox, that they know who the master is. And yet the people of Israel who sin, right? They don't realize that they don't know who their master is. So Omar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Yovo Mishemakir Eivitz Biyolov, let the one who knows the crib of its master, in other words, the donkey, the Yifram Mishenu Makir Eivitz Biyolov, and let him exact punishment from the one who does not know. In other words, the Russia who committed the... Okay. Next. Then, remember, giving a description of the straps that they use in order to perform the malchus. So it says over there, Yodo Tefa, which means literally that the handle of the strap is a handbreadth in thickness. Well, of course, a handbreadth, we figure usually about 4 inches, okay? Mm-hmm. If you make a fist, I guess the measurement would be roughly about 4 inches across, okay? So that's a tefach. Of course, some people have bigger hands, a little, but, let's say the average hand. If you make a fist, it's approximately four inches, okay? So that's the size of the handle, right? So, Omer Abaye, says, Shema Mino. The problem is that, they don't quote the rest of the Mishnah. The rest of the Mishnah says, if we take a look on the previous page over there, Yodot Tevach Urechova, right? Urechbo Tevach, and also the whip is also a Tevach. And then it says, Rosh HaMagas HaPikres, I'm quoting the Mishnah again, right? And the tip of the straps reaches as far as his stomach is concerned, right? And then it says, and they beat him once in front and twice behind him, okay? From the back, okay? So this is what they're now referring to. Okay. So Amar Abaye says, he says, Shmami no, if that's the case, call chad v'chad l'fum gabe abdinle. If it has to go, you know, in other words, if it hits him and it has to wind up at, you know, where his navel is over there, then in that case it would mean that you would have to have a whole assortment of straps, because each one would have a different size,
right,
in order to make sure that it would be in fulfillment, which of course is a little bit unusual, right?
Right.
So Omalei Rova, so Rova says, no, my friend Abaye, not quite that way, he says. Because he says, Imkei no fish lehuitzu is tuba. It means that you have to have lots of straps. Elo Omalei Rova, but rather what Rova says is that Afkasor is late, it has an Afkasor. Now what is Afkasor? According to Rashi, if you take a look, Afkasor, he simply says, comes from the word that we find in Avodah Zorah. It says kemo mevik ovik, which means literally he adheres to it, he hangs on to it, okay, he closely adheres to it. So if that's the case, then this is something that the strap itself adheres to closely. In other words, what we would say, it's some sort of a clasp, okay, so that they have a clasp. And kiboy miktabay kiboy marpabay. So, if he wants, he can either tighten it. Miktar means he can make it shorter. See, the miktar is like mikatsi.
It's adjustable, in other words.
Hebrew, okay? So, he can either shorten the strap, right? Or kiboy, if he wants to marpabay, he could literally loosen it more. So that, in other words, he could either lengthen it more or pull it in more, okay? But it doesn't have to have, you know, all kinds of straps. It's enough. He knows how to manipulate it. Okay. Malkin also, then of course the Mishnah, remember, continued and says that he gets once on his chest, right, and twice on his back, right? So, it says, all right, first of all, yeah, it says, Menohani Mile, right? Where in the text in the Torah do we derive that this is the procedure? So he says, so Rav Kana, he gives the following drosh on the text. He says, the text says, Vehipilo ha-shofet, literally, the shofet causes him to fall down, yeah? Vehikohu lefono, and he smites him, literally, before him. I'm not exactly translating it the way the pshat should be. The pshat should be that the shofet causes him, you know, to bend over, so to speak, and he is given malchus lefonov, meaning in the presence of the judge. That's the pshat. But what is the drash? The drash is that the hipila lefonov, this refers to the person who's getting the malchus. So in other words, where is he getting malchus? He's getting this malchus
in front,
right? That's lefonov. You understand? I mean, how he derives it over there.
Right.
Yeah. And then, And then it says, Kedei Rishoso b'mispar, in accordance with his wickedness, according to the following number. So he says, Risho Achas b'lefonov. In that case, this shows us that he gets one set of malchus in the front for his transgression. In twice, you know, from the rear, okay? Twice from the back. Yes.
I have a question. See, I always assume up until this point that in each set of three, they did two in the back and one in the front.
Yeah. I'm talking in one set of malchus. That one third is administered in the front and two thirds in the back. That's all.
But it isn't that they will do one set of three in the front and then two sets.
No.
Okay.
What I meant is simply that one third of the strokes are given in front and two thirds are given in the back. The order is not really made clear.
Uh-huh.
The Gemara doesn't really discuss, you know, do they first give it to him in his front and then, you know, in other words, let's say if he gets 39 malchus,
right,
does he first get 13 in the front,
right,
and then does he get 26 in the back,
right,
or do they give him, let's say, 13 in the back, 13 in the front, and 13 in the back again, or maybe they go 1, 2, 3, 1, 2, 3 or something.
We don't know.
Okay. I do have to tell you this, however, you know, when I was at the mikveh, this Erev Yom Kippur, the Lubavitchers came in at that time, and they started to give malkus to each other. I told you about that we had a rabbi once who asked me to give him malkus. But here, they were really lined up. So one of them kneels over, and the other one takes a strap, and he says, they only gave him, you know, 39 on the back. He didn't distribute it front and back.
Again, more 39.
All 39, right. I trust he didn't hit him too hard.
He wouldn't be around for the Yom Kippur.
Did it reach around to his belly button?
No.
Didn't reach around. What did he hit him with?
With a strap.
What, just a
belt? Yeah, belt, right. Do you still hold up your pants?
Who was it?
These people came down from Amherst, so I don't know them at all. He may have been among them. Okay.
Well, if we got one third and two thirds, there may be an element of survival.
Yeah.
They thought if he got it in the front, in a heavier ratio, he might not survive.
Perhaps.
There may be a reason for the third.
Well, they make provisions. They also make provisions for if he faints or he urinates or he defecates.
Yeah, I mean, this was already learned. So it's going to be repeated.
But now
they settle in
on the portion.
Yeah.
So they must feel that you get hit in the front.
But I would say that in all probability, the basic motivation, I mean, besides, I mean, all these things that would be mentioned, is still to shame him. Because he committed something for which he deserved this, and he should feel ashamed, and that way he'll do tshuva. And the idea is always again, I mean, that, remember? So, v'niklo ochicha b'yenecha means that your brother shall be disgraced in your eyesight. But the point is that even after he has been disgraced, he should still remain your brother.
You're the Führer with that boy over in Shanghai, or is it Hong Kong?
Singapore.
Custom over there to distract him.
It's physical pain that he suffers from. But you're right, there's no question about that. I'll tell you, in England, they did it anyway. the private schools, remember, they used to cane the kids? Except the practice. Yeah. Right. I still remember when I was a kid. I don't know, maybe first grade, second grade. Teacher took a little girl, apparently she misbehaved. She put her on a knee. Gave her a slice of the top over there. That was supposed to be, you know, to turn her into a model student again.
Didn't Joshua Cantor use the pointer on our backs when we did weren't paying attention?
It is possible.
Sure.
It is possible. In Europe, frankly, this was an accepted practice, you know.
You used to use the pointer.
Yeah.
You didn't pay attention, you got it across your back.
This is what they call the country.
Yeah, we wore our sheepskin lined coats even in the hottest weather.
Okay.
Necessity is the mother of invention.
Good. Okay.
Our parents didn't complain when we got schmized.
No, that's true.
Really?
It's not like the present-day parents who immediately want to fire the teacher, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like the kid that got called.
The 6-year-old kid is being charged with sexual harassment.
I think a point is these six blacks in the Eastville Mall, and five of them were girls, and there was a commotion with the guards, and immediately the black community says they got
Instead of saying
that the kids deserve a little chastisement.
Right, absolutely. So the Mishnah then sort of remembered that when they give him Malkus, he's not either standing or seated, but instead he has to be what? Bent over.
No,
okay. So Amar Rav Chisda, Okay, so first of all he says, Minayin l'ritzua shehi muchpeles. How do we know that the strap that they use has to be actually bent, folded in two when they shmeis? Shenemar v'hi pilo. What does v'hi pilo know? V'hi pilo in this case would mean, in other words, that the strap has to be able to fall down. How does it fall down? If you have up, then you go down. But just a minute ago, how did we interpret the pasuk? We said that the hipilo has a different connotation. In fact, we've given all kinds of connotations to it, right? First of all, we gave it the connotation, you know, that he has to be bent over, right? So, what does that have to do with the strap? Why do we say that the hipilo also refers to bending over the strap, in other words, doubling it that way? This is what the Gemara says. Don't we need that pasuk hipilo in order to teach us the basic teaching of what? Namely, that he has to be bent over when he does it. So how come you're getting two different readings out of it? So he says, Imkain. So he says, well, if that's the case, then lichta kroa yatehu. Let the Torah text say yatehu. If it was only meaning, you know, to bend over, that he should be bent over. My hipilo, what does it mean? That the Torah uses the word hipilo, it says shma minoy tarta. Therefore, we derive two different teachings from the same word. Namely, that he has to be bent over, and also that the strap itself has to be doubled when they use it to shmeis. Okay. Tana Rabbanan, yeah.
How do they double the strap? I don't understand this.
No. Well, in other words, look.
Class?
You have, let's say, a strap that's, let's say it's 3 feet long, right?
Right.
All right, so what they do is that they bend it in two and use it that way, that's all.
Wow.
Yeah, that's
very
what it means. Right.
Wow. Double.
Right. Okay. Then it says, Amake, Amake Biyodi. Yes?
They have a holder. I think it means they have a hole in the stick. Just go through the hole and then they have
a double lower,
yeah.
Yeah, well,
like
this is the way. It's the way Rashi had understood it, that there was a hole in it,
yes,
and it goes through,
so
it becomes double. Right. Right.
Well, I take one strap.
Yeah, well, this is what we had said the other week.
One side, half it hangs on the other side.
Right.
So it's double double.
Right. I mean, if, you know, he simply held in his hand, but, you know, then he's not just holding in his hand, he's holding it with a handle, you see, with the yad, or the yada. Today, in modern Hebrew, use the word yada for any kind of a handle, okay? So, you hold it by the handle, so we learned with Rashi that he thinks that there was a hole in there, you know, through which they threaded the thongs, so that way he could hold
double it,
at the same time it would be doubled over. Now it says, Hamaka Maka Biyode. It says what? When he hits him, he has to hit him what? With one hand. Okay?
Use only one hand.
Yeah. Hamaka Maka Biyode Achas, right? The Mishnah says, Bechol Koyche, with all his strength. That's what it says, okay? So the Gemara comments upon that. It says, Tanra Bonim, sages have taught us in reference to that, that Ein Ma Midin Chazonin. Very interesting comment. It says that the rabbis have a tradition that to appoint chazanim, in this case it doesn't mean that, you know, the guys who daven for the yomid, but it means, you know, the people, you know, who are going to carry out the sentence of the court by the punishment of the court. You have to have people, he says, who are chaseri koach, in other words, they're short on strength. The Yisuri Mada, but they're long in knowledge. In other
superior
words,
knowledge.
They know the rules very well. They know the laws, but they don't have to be the strongest person in the world, okay? Rabbi Yehuda Omer, but he objects to it. On the contrary, he says, it should be Afilo Chaseri Mada, the Yisuri Keach, it says. No, you can even appoint people who are short in knowledge. In other words, they're not such great experts as to what the laws are, But, you know, they have a good right hand, right? They have plenty of strength. So Omar Rava Kavosi to Rabbi Yehuda. So Rava is in agreement with what Rabbi Yehuda said, and he says, you know, I prefer Rabbi Yehuda's definition. He says, because he says Kavosi, according to his opinion, the stubborn makes sense. Why? Yisiv, because the pasuk says Lo Yosef. In other words, when he's whipping him, right, he's not allowed to add more than the prescribed amount. Pan Yosef, and then it says, you know, the pasuk there says, if you remember, it says Arboyim Yakenu Lo Yosef. In other words, he's to smite him 40 lashes,
right,
and not any more than that.
Pan right.
Yosef LaHakoso Mako Gedolo, right, because if he does more than that and gives him, you know, a real great marker, then the Niklo Chichab Yenecha, then, you know, the miscreant will be punished, you know, will be disgraced in your own eyes, right?
Also,
all right.
If he dies.
Yeah, well, that we learned, that if he dies actually under, remember, but if it happens during the prescribed amount,
right.
Then in that case we learned that, you know, the Chazan, you know, is. He's exempt, right? He doesn't go to the year miklah.
Exonerated, yeah.
But if he gave him more than the amount and the person died, then that case has to go into Golis.
Right,
because
right.
Then he's like an accidental murderer. Okay?
Right.
Yeah. All right. So it says, Lo Yosef, he shall not add, right? And then it says, Pardon Yosef, in the next passage, you know, lest if he adds, then, right. So it says, E Amrit Bishlemor, if you say, Chatsere Mador, right, that, you know, the Chazanim don't really know too much about the rules, then Hainad Sokla Surek. Then that's the reason why you have to warn them, why the Torah has to warn them, don't give any more. Because if you do, you're liable to, you know, to have the dire consequences.
Yeah, go through. He doesn't have
right.
Any intelligence. Lacks intelligence, he may not be able to count correctly.
Right, either that, or he doesn't realize that he can only do the prescribed amount,
right.
Not more than
yeah.
That, right? So, Eloi Amit, but if you say, Yisere Mado, people who, you know, they have a lot of knowledge about what's going on, then Mitzorech Lazhure, is it necessary that the Torah should warn them, you know, not to go beyond that? So, the Rabbanan on the other hand, of course, they said, on the contrary, right? They said they should have lots of knowledge and, you know, not be too strong, correct? So, the Rabbanan, so, how about the, you know, the opinion of the rabbis? Why did they say, you know, that you have to have people who have the knowledge?
But not so,
and,
not
so why does the Torah have to warn them, right? So he says, Ein Mizorzin Ela Mizoriz. The answer is that when you know a person is going to do, to follow out exactly what he has to do, then encourage him. Tell him what he has to do. Because people do need direction and encouragement. Okay? Tana. Another thing that they learned, of course, this is all, you know, oral tradition, and that is, Kishehu Magbia, when he raises the strap that he's going to use, right? So Magbia b'shtei yodam, he has to do it with his two hands. But Urshehu Make, but when he smites the guy, then Make b'yodo achas, he smites him with only one hand. Alright? Why that? So it says, because if you strike with one hand, Keheched Elesa Medide. The answer being, because in that particular case, then that way it will fall where it's supposed to fall. Apparently the idea being that you can control it better with one hand than you can with two hands.
In other words,
well,
you hit him in the right place. Is that
yeah,
what you're saying?
Right.
The accuracy.
Yeah.
I wonder what the responsibility of the Chazanim was that he gave the extra blows and
yeah.
It was fatal.
Yeah.
And he has a Chazanim there. Supposed to be there to count and
then
accuracy.
Well, the Chazon over here is the one who's actually doing the whipping.
I thought you had
No.
You had people from the Besdin over there.
Question,
you had
what
people from the
Besdin.
Besdin has to be around there.
What if they got the warning?
It's true. What if they forgot
right.
to warn him? Or who does the counting? I forget. We went over this.
Who does the counting?
Yes. The
person that does the counting is one of the members of the Besdin.
Right, the
Dayan. Right, one of the Dayanim. Right. Remember, the Besdin has three members, okay? And they're going to assign roles to each of them, okay? But it has to be done in the presence of the Besdin itself, because it says, Bikohu Lefono. Remember how I translated before? I said Bikohu Lefono means that they have to give in Malkus. Right. In his presence. Now, who's in his presence? The answer is in the presence of the members of the Besdin. So that they have to be around over there. It isn't one, you know, it isn't the kind of a business that, you know, that the judge passes a sentence and that's it.
Somebody else carries it out.
Right. The judges themselves had to be there for the carrying out of the sentence, so that they felt a greater sense of responsibility.
When they impose sentences.
Right, right, absolutely. And in capital cases, it was the witnesses themselves who, if they're going to carry out the execution, they had to carry out execution. So that way, you know, they really have to be very careful in their own testimony as to what they're doing. There's a much greater sense of personal responsibility than, you know, if you simply go to a court of law where everything is impersonal. You say your piece and that's it, and you finish with it. Okay, so now we shall continue over here. All right, the Hakore Kore. It says, you know, somebody reads out, you know. Now what is he reading? Of course, the answer is he's reading Pesukim, right? But the Pesukim themselves also are tied in with certain counts. As we saw, some of the Pesukim are simply as a warning. You did evil, you should repent, and, you know, and do that which is right. But others, we saw, actually are verses, either from the Torah or from, like, say, Rachum, which comes from Tillim, but these are verses in the Bible which have 13 words in them. So that if you have 13 words, it serves as, you know, a nomic device, you know, for counting. Right. Okay. All right. So Tana Rabbanan. Now, rabbis taught us Hagodol Shebedayonim. In other words, the chief judge of the Besdin. Kore, he is the one who reads the verses. Okay, Hasheni, the next one, Mone, he's the one who makes a count. Okay, number one, two, three, etc. Okay, the Hashlishi, and the third one, what is he doing? So the answer is, the third one, it says Omer Hakeu, he says, hit him again, hit him again. In other words, the one says, okay, he's gotten one, okay, Hakeo, hit him. In other words, or maybe Hakeo simply means, okay, you count, then he tells the Chazan, okay, give him a shmeis.
Well,
maybe that's the way it's
supposed
to be.
Maybe the reason for that is also to determine whether the man can continue to get the markers.
Yeah, well, this we understand.
I mean, somebody like a doctor overlooking
has to be
like
over there,
like
exactly.
A doctor overlooking the the possibility of his fainting or doing what
of course,
the,
of course.
Controlling the count.
Right,
though.
Right. But the fact is that the court, the members of the court are personally involved in this.
Mm.
Personally involved. So if one of them reads the pasuk and another one counts, so the third one will give the direction, I guess, to the chazan that he should smite him. Yeah.
Right.
And I said hit him again, I was really joking a little bit, but that's probably the order in which it went. Okay. Bisman shemakor merubo marich, bisman shemakor muetes mekatzer. Now, it seems to me that the meaning over here is that if it's makim aruba, in other words, if he has to get maybe, let's say, a full count, right, then in that particular case, the person who is reading, you know, the pasuk, he has to take his time reading the pasuk, obviously, so that the guy can have a chance to recover a little bit, you know, after each blow, okay? And bisman shemakim uetas, but when, let's say, they decided it's only a short amount of Marcus, then in that case, the katzer, he can shorten the pasuk. That's one way, it seems to me, that there's an explanation. Yeah, we can take a look at the Rashi. Rashi is more or less in agreement with, you know, my opinion. Okay. It says Maka Muetis. I don't know if you see it over there. It's let's say it would be roughly about 9-10 lines down. Maka Muetis. It says Shigon, for example. Shamaduhu Lifchos Maka. That, you know, that they estimated that he should cut down on the number of makas. So in that case, that they hurry up the reading in order not to prolong the agony of this person, since obviously he's not physically capable of standing up too much. So now they ask the kasha on this. He says, didn't we learn in the Mishnah that if he finishes the pasuk, he goes back again and says the pasuk all over again? So the Gemara says mitzvah letzamtzim. It's a mitzvah to cut short, to condense. It's not a mitzvah, you know, to prolong more and more and more and more. Try to get it over as fast as possible, and that's it. Because it'll be easier in the final analysis for the other person, right? So the elot same, but if he didn't cut it short, then then in that case he goes back and reads the pasuk over again. But in general, it's better to get it over with as quickly as you possibly can. Okay. Tanu Rabbanan, Maka Rabba, Ein Li Ela Maka Rabba, Maka Muetes Binayin. Okay. How do I know? It says that you have to give him a makah rabba, right? Give him a big amount of source. But how do we know that even if you give him just a small amount, that what? That whatever the court has decided, let's say they say that they only should get 3, or should get 9 blows, or 18 blows, or whatever it may be, 15, right? Mm-hmm. So, minayin, how do we know that also over there you can't go beyond the prescribed amount? Talmud Lomo, so the pasuk tells us that's low your seat, right? It's not to add. So imkei Talmud Lomo Maka Rabba. So in that case, why is the Torah teaching us the idea of Maka Rabba? So he says the answer is that it's limit al rishonu shehin Maka Rabba. He teaches us that the first blows, this already constitutes a Maka Rabba. So if they have to shorten it, then the guy has already been given enough punishment. This is the idea. Niskalkel, now what if he has an accident, such as we said before, let's say a bowel movement or urination? Alright, so Tana Rabba, our sages thought, and this is a sort of an amplification of what the Mishnah says. It says, Echad ho'ish, v'echad ho'isha v'rei, v'lo v'mayim, divrei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's opinion is that men and women have the same din if they have a bowel movement. Okay? Namely, that at that particular point it stops, right? But they do not have the same din when it comes to urination. This is what he says. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Rabbi Yehuda comes and he says a little differently. He says, Ho'ish b'rei, v'yo'ish b'mayim. Namely, that the man, you stop if he has a bowel movement, right? The woman, if she urinates. This is the way we learned in the Mishnah, incidentally, too. Okay? The Chachamim Omrim, but the sages say, Echad ho'ish, the Echad ho'isha, there's no difference between men and women, bein b'rei, bein b'mayim, whether it is with defecation or urination. In other words, according to this statement, then the rabbis are in agreement about what? That it wouldn't make any difference whether it's a man or a woman. Even if just they urinate as a result of the stress, the pressure, and so on. So they would be potter. Unlike what Rabbi Yehuda said, that the man is as far as
only as far as the soil,
only as far as rei is concerned, right? Only as far as defecating. Omer Rab Nachman by Yitzchak says Shneim Shavim Berei says actually they're all in agreement, as far as if he or she has a bowel movement. So what is he commenting? He's commenting simply upon the fact that, well, at least there's no point of difference over there. Okay, that they're all agreed. Okay. Omar Shmuel said interesting bit. Kifasuhu. Let's say they already tied him. Remember we said that they bend him over the pillar, the post, whatever, and then they tied his hands one and the other. Now let's say somehow or other he's Houdini.
He gets out.
He gets out, Verotz Bebezdin, and he runs. He runs away. So in that case, it says Potter. That's it. He's already suffered enough shame just by what? By having his hands tied. So the fact that he was able to get out afterwards, you don't drag him back again and do it, okay?
No,
it's already
where it's at. No matter where it's at.
No, you're right. Blows. Yeah.
It's interesting.
Yeah. Maisvei. So they ask a kasha on this because they have another teaching, you know, that disagrees. It says, Kolo Bein Barishena Bein Bashniya Potrin herself. If he became disgraced, in whatever way I guess it is, right? Whether it was with a first blow, you know, the first blow of the set of Malkus, or the second blow, then potrin so, they free him. In other words, let's say they give him a shmeis, right? And then he immediately has this urination or whatever it may be and so on. And in that case, don't continue, even if it's only one blow that he had. Don't go through a whole set of three or anything like that. That's it. Whether it's the first blow or the second blow, you set him free. Omar Shmuel. Shmuel said, "No, wait a minute. I said that already." Yeah.
Right.
Okay. I'm on the wrong line. Right. Okay. Now, what happens if, for some reason or other, the strap breaks? So he says, "Vashniya." If they've already given him one good shmeis with a blow, and this is now the second blow that they're giving him, the breaks on the second blow, then in that case, potrin also. They set him free. Okay? But Barishona, if it happened on the very first shot, then in that case,
he remains for the rest of the final.
So they say, am I? Why? What is the logic over there? He says, Lehave Karat. Why don't you consider him in the same category as the guy who ran away, let's say, from the punishment of the Besdin, right? So he says, Hosam Rots and Hochalo Rots, because there he ran away, and here he didn't run away. He stayed around. And because he stayed around, so therefore, presumably, you should administer Malkus to him. But...
What choice did he have if he was tied up?
Right, he says he got rid of...
He can't get loose. The fact that the strap broke on the first time or the second time, there's no clear logic as to his opportunity to run away.
Yeah, true. I can't argue that point either. I'm only telling you what it says.
Okay.
We'll take a look at the Rashi yet before. I'll go down to the Mishnah over here, a couple more lines, and then we'll do a little bit of reviewing of the Rashi.
He had a lot of opportunity to thrash around somehow, release himself.
Uh-huh. Well, maybe in time too tight, you know, it depends.
Toda Rabbona, our sages have taught us that Anduhu Sheyilke Kola, if they determine, they estimate that when they give him Malkus, he's going to be disgraced, in other words, something is going to happen, then in that case, potrinoso, they could free him immediately from Malkus. Besdin has such a right. If they feel that, in other words, he cannot withstand physically the Malkus, and he's already suffered enough disgrace simply by what? By being called by the Besdin and told, you know, that he deserves Malkus, right? So, in that particular case, potrin herself. Now, how about l'chsheyotzei mebesdin, kola, if they determine that when he leaves the court, right? This is before, right? That it happens as soon as he left the court, but obviously... They didn't yet tie him down to a post or anything like that, right? Kola. So in that case, Malkinoso. Then in that case, they'll wait and they'll give him Malkus. On the other hand, there's a different reading which says, right, ain't Malkin. Take a look in the margin over there. So it's a question how you read this. Do you read it that he'll get malchus? If the court determines that he can't stand it at all, then as soon as he leaves the court he can? Or do we say that he has to be tied down, right? And then the court makes a decision that he can't withstand physically, in which case they can free him. So it's a question how you read this, okay? Below, not only that, afilu kolo batchilo malkanoso. There is an opinion that says that even if he became disgraced at the very beginning of the whole process, then he still gets malkus. Shenemar, because it is written vehikol, in other words, he deserves at least one stroke, the niklon, right? And then he becomes disgraced. Below, shaloko kvor bebesdin, and not that he's already received malkus at the hands of the bezdin. But that doesn't make sense. So that therefore there's a note on the side which says below she niklo kvor bebesdin. In other words, he has already suffered shame in the court itself. So just suffering shame in the court may not excuse him. But as we can see, there are conflicting ideas over here. Does he get any kind of malchus, or is the whole idea that, you know, if the members of the bezdin know that this person simply cannot stand, you know, and as soon as anything is going to happen, even just the very threat of malchus, he's going to lose control, then in that particular case he would be potter. And the bezdin has the right to free him in that case. All right, take a look a little bit at the Rashi over
did
here.
Did he actually do this? Is there any record of them actually punishing people?
I am positive that malchus have been carried on.
Yeah.
Because
they didn't have prisons then in those days.
No. There were no prisons. You're right. I mean, I mentioned that before, too. Right. That the whole idea was punish the guy for doing something wrong.
Embarrassing, yeah.
Right. In this case, it's embarrassment, but also the idea that as a result of getting malchus, he'll do tshuva and he'll change his way of life. Okay? That's the hope. In the case of, for example, robbery, so there, right. The idea is right. Replace. I am double. I am triple the amount. I mean, not triple. But, you know, in some cases it's four or five times you pay the amount. In the case of an ox or a sheep, you know, if he sells, he steals and then, you know, he either sells it or he slaughters it or something like that. But, again, you know, it's not jail time. It's restitution that's important. And makes a lot of sense.
Rehabilitate people.
Well, they rehabilitated them by making them pay.
It looks like at that time too, there was a strong communal knowledge.
Yes.
Which, why would a man be shamed if he was that type of person? That
you're right.
You know, it had to be shamed in the community, social structure. Otherwise, it really wouldn't work.
Yeah, you're absolutely right.
Even the worst criminal had pride.